Your financial choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA. We inform you that any federal tax, state tax, financial advice, or information contained in this communication is not intended to be personalized or specific in nature or to be relied upon for your personal situation in any circumstance. The advice and information are not intended and cannot be used as a tax opinion letter nor used for the purpose of avoiding tax-related penalties. For personalized advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I am a CPA, CFP professional, and AEP on the web at yourfinancialchoices.com. And you can listen online each and every week at wdiy.org. Today is April 7th, 2021. The markets were mixed today with the Dow closing up at 33,446, the NASDAQ pretty flat but slightly down at 13,688, and the S&P up at 4,079. Our topic tonight is understanding ESG. What is that? Responsible investing and first quarter insights. And I will have a guest join us momentarily. I also want to remind folks that we are live tonight. We will take your questions. Lori C is in the studio with us this evening. We will answer your calls, take your information, and we ask you to mute your radio so you can hear us without the delay and we can talk without confusion. We discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments. And while I typically have a topic each week, you can still ask questions off topic. I'll do my best to answer them. The number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. And you can speak live on air with us, or if you're not comfortable speaking live on air, just give your question to Lori C. She'll write it down and bring it into the studio. Email is also available at yourfinancialchoices.com. I'm going to welcome my guest this evening, William Henderson. He is joining us via telephone. Bill is Vice President and Head of Investments at Valley National Financial Advisors. He joined the team with more than 30 years of experience, including 26 years at BlackRock. Bill leads the firm's investment department, chairs the Internal Investment Committee, and directs all investment research efforts. In this role, he provides investment analysis and assists the advisory teams with portfolio strategy and asset allocation direction. He meets frequently with representatives from global asset managers to discuss their views about the economy and financial markets, and he lends his own current market observations in Valley National Financial Advisors, the weekly commentary email newsletter. Bill is a native of Pennsylvania and received his undergraduate and graduate degrees from Penn State in the areas of finance and investments. Welcome back, Bill. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, hi, Lori. Thanks for having me back.
Thank you for coming back. Thank you for coming back. I know that you like educating folks, so I think this is a great opportunity to do that. Tonight, we're going to talk about understanding ESG. We have heard that term thrown around for a long time, but I don't think it's fair to make an assumption that everybody knows what that means. So do you mind taking a little time to talk about what ESG stands for and then how it relates to responsible investing?
Sure, thanks, Lori. And I think it's important that you pointed out that everyone, I believe, sometimes takes it for granted that the world knows when you say ESG what the heck that means. But really, it's ESG, for the letters, it stands for environmental, social, and governance. And they are just three terms that are used to generally define this space. So when we talk about the E of environmental, what we mean are natural resource use, things like pollution and waste, clean technology, things that are bigger picture items for overall for the environment, especially when it comes to sustainable use of our resources. So clean water, clean air, clean forests, things like that. Mm-hmm. The S stands for social, and that is mostly has a human impact. So things like inclusion and diversity, makeup of a company's capital, makeup of a company's staff, things like the product liability, very important to be aware of a firm's liability in terms of doing the right thing and then being responsible when they do the wrong thing. Mm-hmm. And then lastly, in the social, data privacy. So we've seen a lot in the last few years about data hacks. So when some firms announces that they've had a big data breach, you know, that's something that's in the social part of ESG. And then lastly, governance. And this is just how a firm is managed from a big picture perspective. So the board of directors, do we follow proper accounting procedures that are globally accepted? Do we, who owns the company? Is there a broad, diverse ownership of the company? And is the board broadly diversified among professions, among ethical makeup and things like that? So very important. And that's broadly what ESG means. And when you look at ESG as an investor, what I like to link to that is a term, responsible investing. So it's very easy to say I'm an investor, but is it also easy to be a responsible investor? And when someone is a responsible investor, generally they look at ESG and say, how can I overlay my portfolio and have it be, you know, within the realm of what ESG is? And you've seen a lot of this in the headlines recently, this year, the last couple of years, but I think we can talk a lot about that tonight and how it's making a big impact in what's going on in the investment space.
It's interesting, Bill, because you kind of have pulled some of this together, the environmental social governance, and really brought it back to the individual companies. I think sometimes people also kind of get lost in that when they're investing, because there's ETFs now and index funds and mutual funds, and we might see a fund that says it's ESG, but you're really bringing it back to kind of looking through all that and looking at the companies in particular. Is that safe to say?
That's exactly right. It's not like when we look at whether or not an investment is ESG or whether or not it fits in with our responsible investing definition, we really want to dig down and see, is this firm just putting that label on there for the sake of having a nice, cute label, or is it really ESG compliant? And it's very difficult because there is no industry standard yet. You may think there's some rule out there that says, okay, this is what defines ESG, this is what defines a green, this is what defines a not green bond. But really, the rules are still being laid out. This is such a new phenomena, you know, in terms of recent newness. You know, it's been around mm-hmm. for 40 or more years. There used to be a lot of socially impactful investing. So what used to happen in this space is you would have exclusions. So we would see an investor and they would say, okay, this is what I don't want to have. I don't want to have guns. I don't want to have gambling. I don't want to have, you know, your sin stocks, so gambling, tobacco, firearms, things like that. But that's not the case anymore. Now it's like, we don't just want to know what you're excluding. We want to know what you're doing. Mm. And if you really say you're ESG, you better be holding yourself to a much higher standard to this. We want to read about it. We want to see the makeup of your board. We want to see what your impact is. And there's been quite a number of recent initiatives, public initiatives, by large asset management firms. BlackRock and Merrill Lynch announced last week that they are signing the Net Zero Asset Managers Initiative. This is a group of 43 investors that have agreed to only do things that they believe follow a responsible investing or an ESG model for their clients. So that's $32 trillion of assets following this sort of a new mantra. That's why I believe it's really important to pay attention to this.
So you said BlackRock and Merrill Lynch are two that signed on with that initiative?
Yes.
And it's individual companies as well? Or because these are investment companies, but are there also other corporate entities?
So how it works is when companies like BlackRock or Vanguard or Merrill, all of which have signed this agreement, that means that they are now going to do investigative research on their end to make sure that the money they invest for their clients is truly following a responsible investing path.
Okay. All right. That's great. Bill, we're coming up on our first break. When we come back, I thought maybe we could talk about some of the trends and while you feel it's important and timely to talk about this right now. Okay?
Sure.
So you'll hang tight.
Thank you.
Folks, if you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. on the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Do you have a car that you're trading in? How about an old truck or boat that's taking up space? Let WDIY help you get rid of unwanted vehicles and turn them into financial support for the station. It's a simple and easy process. We handle all the towing, title, and transfer, and it may be tax deductible. Turn your vehicle into the programs you love. To learn more, visit WDIY.org or call 610-694-8100, extension 7.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices, and I have with me this evening Bill Henderson, Vice President and Head of Investments at Valley National Financial Advisors. We're talking about understanding ESG and responsible investing, and then we're also going to talk about our first quarter insights as we go through the show. Bill, I think it's really interesting that, you know, you mentioned the SIN stocks, and I recall back in the day, that's what people would come in and say. They'd say, I don't want anything with guns. I don't want anything with gambling. And that's how you would decide kind of like where the money was going to go. It's kind of nice that they're starting to try to put this into a little bit of a box to make it a little bit more organized and a little bit more attainable or available, I should say, to a lot of people with these broader concerns. So you've mentioned environmental being natural resources, pollution, clean technology, social, human impact, inclusion, diversity, data privacy, and governance, how a firm has managed their accounting procedures, diversity. Board, that is really, really all very important and available now. So can you talk a little bit about some of the trends that you're seeing with this? Because we are hearing about it more. And why do you think it's important?
Sure. Thanks, Lori. And, you know, a trend is that we're hearing about it, right? I mean, that's a really, really big trend. It didn't used to really be talked about. Like historically, people would request it on a very rare occasion. But now our client base is coming to us and asking about it. And we're seeing it talked about every single day in all the major financial, publishing houses, everything you're seeing it. And so I talked a little bit about the big investment firms and why they've signed on and what it really means. But in terms of the companies, so these are the firms that issue the debt, issue the bonds, issue their stock. Why is it important to them? Well, in March of 2021, this year, there were $73 billion of new green bonds issued. So a green bond generally is a bond that an analyst would consider, I'm putting it quotes up, green, meaning it does something, you know, healthy for the environment. You know, a solar field or a clean water project, something like that. That is a huge increase from the first quarter of 2020. So quarter over quarter, we've seen 186% increase from the first quarter of 2020 to the first quarter of 2021. Mm. And that's showing that, you know, huge companies are not only demanding this, but the issuers are being responsive to it and saying, okay, if this is what our investors want, we're going to do it. And President Biden's infrastructure spending bill really includes things like clean water, high internet speed. You know, internet speed, maybe that doesn't sound like a green bond or a ESG thing, but offering high-speed internet to underserved communities, offering it to, you know, rural communities is huge. So that is considered, you know, an ESG effort.
Yeah, and I appreciate that. Hey, Bill, we have a caller. We have Carolyn from Sailorsburg, and I think she has a question about companies being rated. Carolyn, can you hear us?
Yes,
hi.
I can.
Hi.
I first want to say I just think this is such a wonderful topic, and as you know, years ago when we started investing, we wanted to put our money where our mouth is because we've always been more like green oriented, respectful of water resources, et cetera. So I just think this is so great, and I would like to know where to go for more information. And also, will there be some kind of rating for companies, like, for example, how Charity Navigator will rate? And I'm sure there's other groups, but they rate companies, you know, 1-star through 4-star, depending on how responsible they are for this sort of thing. Because I'm sure there could be a lot of deception out there, and that concerns me.
Mm. Bill, do you have some?
That's an excellent question, and a really wonderful comparison to Charity Navigator. Currently, as I mentioned a little bit earlier, that there isn't yet an industry standard. You know, each investment firm or Standard & Poor's, Moody's, companies like that assign their own ESG rating or green rating. Now, certain firms issue and they will get on their prospectus that say this is a green bond or this is considered a green investment. But you really have to leave it up to the investment manager, to the person that's managing your money, to do the groundwork and do the due diligence to dig into it. Sometimes you have to read the prospectus and see what it is. You know, we've seen our analysts have looked at so-called green bonds, and you look, and only 10% of the deal is going to go to a LEED building. So that's a building that's considered energy efficient, where the other 90% goes, nobody knows. So it takes a little bit of effort, but where you go to find it is anywhere right now. This information is at every major investment house. There's published information about it. You can find it on, you know, obviously Google it, look for it anywhere, and just pressure your investment advisors to do work for you and educate you and do the legwork that's needed to make sure that it's not just a title, but it really is an investment. And it's out there, and you should hold your investment people accountable to this. And I think it's very possible to do a good job in this space.
Okay. Carolyn, did that help?
That's wonderful. Thank you so much for covering this excellent topic. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Carolyn. Thanks for calling in. So, Bill, that was a great question. And could you maybe talk about the green bonds again a little bit? Can we put that, we've got about 3 minutes before our next break, but could you put that in perspective in ESG investing?
Sure. So
And the trend, sorry, Bill, and you were demonstrating it as a trend, but still kind of explain, because we talked about investing in companies, which could be through an ETF or a mutual fund or something that have this ESG, mantra.
Yep.
But now you're talking about bonds.
Okay, so a green bond is simply a bond that a corporation issues that is considered green in the sense where they have designated that the source, that the use of these proceeds for this bond are going to be used for what can be considered an ESG use. So in most cases, it's, you know, bonds for social and governance, probably not, but bonds for environmental uses. So you're going to build a clean water plant, mm-hmm. or you're going to build a solar field, and you're going to use the proceeds to transfer this particular power plant of ours from using coal to using solar energy. And to do that, it's going to take an investment of, $100 million. So you issue $100 million of bonds, and you promise to use all $100 million to build a solar field that's going to fuel this plant. So you'll cut the plant off from coal, you'll move it to solar energy, and that becomes a green bond. And those green bonds are then bought by companies like BlackRock and Merrill Lynch and all the large and Vanguard to put into their portfolios, that then they can say this much of our portfolio is now designated as a green bond. And the trend is, parabolic. We have seen huge increases year over year. The numbers are doubling from 1 year to the next in terms of issuance of green bonds. Not necessarily because of these companies decided to issue it, but it's the demand. So it starts at the investor level. The investor wants a product that they can consider ESG. They tell their investment manager. Their investment manager says, I'm not going to buy a bond unless it's green. Now the company has to say, well, I guess I have to do something. Mm-hmm. And when $23 trillion of assets are now saying we're only going to do the right thing, you're going to see the results in terms of issuers from the companies. So it starts at the very basic level of the investor, goes to the investment management companies, and then goes to the companies that do the actual work, and they're going to respond. I mean, we know what they respond to, right? And this is really the trends that we've seen.
It's really interesting. It's going to be fascinating to watch, especially coupled with the infrastructure bill if that goes through. It'll be very interesting to watch. Bill, we're on our next break coming up. So when we come back, we'll continue our discussion about understanding ESG and talking about the money flowing into the space. I think it's very interesting that it's coming from investor demand. We also had a caller call in a question off air, and Susan, I will answer that question when we come back from this next break. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
American folk music offers a variegated pattern of performers and styles. I'm Tom Druckenmiller, your host for In the Tradition. Together, we'll trace the roots and branches of American folk music from the earliest recordings and performers through today's talented players. In the Tradition, Wednesday evening from 7 to 9 p.m. on WDIY 88.1 FM and WDIY.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY 88.1. We are talking with Bill Henderson, Vice President and Head of Investments at Valley National Financial Advisors this evening, learning so much about ESG investing, environmental, social, and governance investing, and the trends that we're seeing in that. We're also going to talk about the first quarter market and kind of see where things have gone with that. But first, we had Susan from Phillipsburg called and asked a question, income tax question. She said, in 2020, was the required minimum distribution in effect, and is it extended to May 17th? Because the tax returns aren't due until May 17th. Susan, no. The waiver of the required minimum distribution was only for 2020 under the CARES Act. They have not extended that. So that was only for 2020. We expect that required minimum distributions will continue to be required in 2021. That is not extended. Okay? So, Susan, I hope that helped. So, Bill, we are talking about ESG investing and talking about the trend that you've seen in the money going into it. And you made a comment. You said, really, the investor is kind of demanding this. Is there some kind of confluence of events, though? You know, what is driving it? Is it just the investor? Is it awareness that has been brought to the investor through corporate, you know, conversations around this or through government intervention? Have you kind of looked at that to see what is driving some of this?
Yeah, a little bit, Lori. Thanks for that question. I think this whole, you know, it started, I think, originally with awareness. People were aware that this was out there and maybe we should start to think about it, see what's going on. The next step was acceptance, like, okay, yes, I believe this is the right thing to do. Sure, sounds great. Let's talk about it a little bit more. But now we are in the action phase. We are done. Everybody accepts it. Everybody's aware. Now we want action. And we are seeing action from all facets of the market. We're seeing it, as I said, the investor is demanding it. Demand for ESG products, that's one of the number one questions we're hearing from our clients. Mm-hmm. How can I do this? Dollars flowing into ESG-related investments are soaring compared to last year. And then secondly, and this is a big point, like you mentioned the word inflection point. What I believe an inflection point could be, last year, our own internal ESG strategies matched or outperformed some of our strategies that were non-ESG. So mm-hmm. finally, like you can say, yes, this is what I want to do. And guess what? I don't have to give up any performance. A lot of times people, I think your previous caller said, I've always been green and I didn't care to give up an income for it. That's wonderful. Mm-hmm. But now you don't have to give up an income. You can be just as green, just as responsible with your investments and still get very good returns. Mm-hmm. And I think that's when everyone's finally going to be aware and insist on it being the case. And when you have the largest investment managers taking action and all the clients asking for it, it's going to take place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it seemed like, you know, years ago, it was a very thin basket that you could choose from.
Mm-hmm.
And it really has really blown up quite a bit. So that helps, of course. So do you believe responsible investing has reached a milestone? And when we talk about ESG, is that the equivalent of responsible investing? Or do you think there should be some distinction there?
Well, I think when I look at responsible investing, I think it's people that believe that they can take their money and it's pretty simple, right? Is it, I can take my money and responsibly invest it. I know that sounds simplistic, but that, I believe most people would want clean water. Most people want clean air. They want clean forest. Whether you're a hunter or a hiker or someone that just likes to look at trees or swim in lakes or have clean energy and clean technology, I think we're all going to agree with that generally.
Mm-hmm.
And I really think we've reached a point where all that can be done and investors can say, you know, I want to do this and do it responsibly. And another thing that has really happened is it has been made really easy.
Mm-hmm.
Responsible investing is easy to implement. There are many, many ESG-themed mutual funds. There's a lot of exchange products. There's private strategies. We employ all those. And an investor can come to us with no plan whatsoever, but wanting to be a responsible investor and follow ESG principles, and we would lay it out for them. And it doesn't cost any more. And in the long run, I don't think you're going to be hurt in performance by doing it this way.
Okay. Bill, we have a caller on line one. We have Jackie from Columbus, Ohio. Jackie, can you hear us?
I can. Do you hear me?
I do. How can we help you?
So I've been listening to the different strategies for ESG, and I've been thinking about this the last couple of weeks. So somebody my age, over 59 and a half, and you have a 401k, and obviously if you take some money after that age, let's just assume whatever you use it for, obviously it's considered income.
Right.
So now you're taxed on it.
Yeah.
But what if you were using it for, let's say, home remodeling? Is there any sort of a shelter where you're not taxed as much, so that if you use that money rather than, you know, for a vacation,
mm-hmm.
it falls under a different bracket when it's counted as income?
Yeah, no, Jackie. What you might be thinking of, there are certain exceptions to early withdrawal penalties on retirement accounts if someone takes it out pre-age 59 and a half. There could be a exception to a penalty on early withdrawal. But once you are normal retirement age, which is age 59 and a half,
right,
then
which
when you take it out, there's no 10% penalty, but there is the income tax consequence if it's all pre-tax dollars that you put in your account over the years. Now, occasionally someone might have after-tax dollars in a 401k, or you might have a Roth IRA. If you have Roth money, you may be able to take out the original contributions without tax consequences. But anything that you put in pre-tax into a retirement account, once you take a distribution, it is going to be income taxable. The only exception that I know of to make a distribution from a retirement account not taxable is once your required minimum distribution age, you can make a charitable gift out of your IRA, but that's not till your required minimum distribution age or age 70 and a half as well. So you'd want to think that through before you take money out. And frankly, if the market continues to do well, it might behoove you to take out a home improvement loan or a home equity loan or something like that at these low rates and let your investments ride a little bit. So that's
right.
Something to, explore with your advisor.
Okay, great.
Okay.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much. Thank you for calling in. We appreciate it.
All right.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bill, we're coming up on our halftime break. So when we come back, we'll continue our discussion on ESG investing. And let's talk a little bit when you come back about the pandemic and if that has impacted this area of investing. Folks, if you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. And you can talk live on air with us. Or if you're not comfortable talking live on air, just give your question to Lori C. and she'll write it down and bring it in to me. We will be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Good evening, WDIY Lehigh Valley Public Radio. I'm Shawnee Gray. It is now 6:30 and 71 with clear skies. Lehigh Valley weather tonight is going to be mostly clear, low 44. Thursday is going to be sunny, high 69. Thursday night, low 44. Friday, you're going to have a chance of showers, high 62. And Friday night, it's going to be around 46. Saturday, more showers, high 65. And Saturday night, low 52. Now, back to your financial choices with Lori Seabird.
Thank you, Shandi. Welcome back, folks. I have as my guest this evening via telephone Bill Henderson, who is Vice President and Head of Investments at Valley National Financial Advisors. He joined our team with 30 years of experience, including 26 years at BlackRock. So it's really fun to listen to Bill talk about this stuff because he comes with a lot of experience. So we have been talking about ESG investing, Bill. And what do you think? You mentioned that, you know, there's been a big influx in money into this space from, you know, quarter one 2020 to quarter one 2021. We've had an election since then. We've been through a pandemic. How much of that do you think has impacted this space, if at all?
I think a reasonable amount. I mean, the pandemic really caused a massive shift in working from an office to working at home, as everybody probably knows. I mean, look at our phone call. I'm not in the office. I'm working from home right now. Mm-hmm. You know, probably 80% of the people during the pandemic were on the service side of things working from home. I don't think it'll continue at that level, but we could see forever 30 to 40% of people working from home. The social side of that, so remember ESG, there's this a social part. The social side of that working from home, I don't think has been completely factored in yet to the investment equation. There's a lot to think about there. People working from home, you know, they could be lonely. They have less interaction with people. There's less potential idea generation when you're not in a setting where you're communicating or on a trading floor in the old days, you know, a lot of back and forth. But then on the other side, you know, the good that could have come from that is, you know, the ability to working from home gives, you know, dual working families the ability to help their children to be home for doctor's appointments and not have to take a day off to go somewhere. So I think it's opened up a bunch of different things to look at in terms of the S part of ESG. And I think this is going to play out over several years. But the part of the pandemic that also has impacted the ESG is the investment in technology we are going to see coming from this. Yeah, I mean, we were pretty fortunate that there was a lot of broadband internet access for people to work from home. Think about doing Zoom, you know, from an old modem line. It just wouldn't have happened. But luckily, people had that in their house. So that's just going to continue to be invested. And as I mentioned before, President Biden's infrastructure plan includes a lot of investment in broadband internet. That's going to help technology companies. You know, you're going to continue to see, you know, Google and Amazon, companies that invest a lot in storage and web services, you know, continue to do well because the working from home is going to continue.
Yeah, and think about, Bill, all these companies that brought broadband to the schools and the communities that didn't have access to be able to go online. A lot of the, you know, poorer communities who may not have had that access that now do. So we have seen a lot of improvements in that. Bill, let me jump in for a second because we have Jane from Allentown on line one. Jane, can you hear me?
I can.
Okay, hi. How can I help you?
So my mom recently passed,
And it's a two-part question. I don't think she filed her taxes for 2020. My first part is, how do I find out if she did? And the second one is, so she's not a very good record keeper, so I need to file taxes for her. And how do I, what's the best way to go about in doing that?
Okay.
She's retired on Medicare, and she receives a pension.
Okay, so she passed in 2021?
Yeah, she died like a month ago.
Okay, sorry about that.
Thanks.
So first of all, to file an extension, it's a form 4868, and you can just, you know, file that. If you think she owes, then you would send in a payment with the extension. But if you don't think she owes, because normally maybe she never owes, maybe she always gets a refund.
I don't think she owes.
Okay. But. Did you have a copy of her 2019 tax return?
I found a 2013.
Okay. She may not have, you know, filed at all. So if it probably isn't going to hurt to file the extension just in case. And then if someone's going to be appointed executor or not,
that would be me.
Okay. Well, you can order a transcript from the IRS. You can go on the IRS.gov and just search transcript of tax returns and follow kind of the instructions for the transcript. But because she has passed, you may have to do it as the executor, the personal representative. So once you get appointed.
What is it called again?
A transcript of the tax filing, and they'll let you know if they have nothing on record. So if I were you, I would probably do it for 17, 18, and 19, 18, 19, and 20. 18, 19, and 20. Because if she had refunds due, you could still try to file and get those refunds. People don't realize. They think they don't owe money, so they don't file, but you also could be leaving money on the table. But she may not have been required to file, so you might just want to kind of get your bearings and see if her Social Security and her pension, because Social Security is only taxable if she has, you know, a certain amount of other income. She might have been under the, you know, income limit. So,
yeah, I think with her pension, she was over it, because I know her brother said that she was filing, but we just can't find evidence that she filed for 2020.
Yeah. Well, she might not have filed for 2020, so, you know, do the extension, 4868. No one signs anything.
I'm sorry, what is it called?
4868.
4868.
Yep, and you just file it with the filing area. Just Google that on the IRS's website, irs.gov. Just put in form 4868 and pull it up with the instructions. It's very, very easy. You don't have to sign anything. Just mail it in.
So I can do that even though we don't have the executorship set up yet?
Yep, I don't think it should be a problem. I mean, if you're going to be the executor anyway. Yeah, you're fine.
I am, but we have to file that because we can't find the will either, so we have to go to the courthouse and file that. And, but I know there's a deadline for taxes, and I don't want us to get hit with fines.
Yeah, no,
you don't need to be.
Yeah, well, it would only cover late filing penalties. That's why it's so great to do an extension. It'll keep you from any late filing if she does owe. If you do end up owing, it doesn't keep you from paying penalties for underpayment or late payment, but it will definitely help with no filing penalty. You don't want to.
Okay.
All right. Yeah. Well, good luck with that, Jane.
Is there anything else that we should be looking for to do this? So file the extension.
File for the extension.
Transcript of the tax filing.
Yep. Look for the transcript of the tax filing, and then just, you know, search around the house to see if you can find her other tax returns. If she did it online, you might not find them. Some people don't print them. They just keep them
I think she did the last couple of years online, and that's why I can't find them.
Yep. That could be. Yep.
Okay.
So you might just, the transcript will tell you, though. The transcript will tell you all of, you know, all the pertinent information. Okay.
Now, do I have to show proof of executorship to file for a transcript?
Well, that you might have to be the, you might have to be the executor to do that. I haven't had anyone that's had to do that to know for sure. But if you go on IRS.gov and search in that search box, transcript, it should give you the instructions of what you might need to do.
Now, if I'm filing for the extension, how much extension do I get?
Until October 15th.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay, perfect.
Okay, good luck, Jane.
All right, thank you.
Thank you. Have a good night. Bye-bye.
All right.
Okay, thank you for that question. Thank you for the calls tonight. I've really enjoyed all the calls and questions. So we want to continue our conversation with Bill Henderson talking about ESG. So we do, Bill, think that there has been a reasonable amount of impact from the pandemic on this. And it really, I think it really is going to be a very interesting space to watch. Now, we have talked about the investment side of this ESG equation. What impact are you seeing on corporations?
Yeah, that's a good question, Lori. And if you think about how a corporation is valued today, so this is purely from an equity perspective, a stock market perspective. What's a corporation worth? You know, what's it valued? Historically, you would look at all the equipment, plant, property, things that this company owned, and you'd place a value on it. And maybe there'd be some intangibles in there, like their brand name. And, you know, the name of the company was worth something.
Mm-hmm.
Historically, that made up the vast majority of the company. So as far back as 1975, about 90% of a company's worth was made up of hard goods, things that you could look, feel, touch, and see.
Mm-hmm.
Today, it is barely 17% of assets.
Oh.
Most, this is in the S&P 500. Most firms, their market value is in purely intangible assets. So things like goodwill, brand recognition, intellectual property, patents, and trademarks. And it makes sense if you think about the biggest companies today, they're Facebook, Google, Twitter. These are giants that don't really have a product that you can touch or feel, but everything they have is their reputation. So why is this important? Why am I bringing this up?
Mm-hmm.
If Google were to make a really, really big mistake, it would kill their brand. It would kill their reputation. It would kill everything that the company is worth. Whereas historically, you could make a building could burn down and it wouldn't wreck the company.
Mm-hmm.
But now everything that is a lot of the largest companies today is built up in their brand and their reputation. So that's why we go back to the G part, the environmental, social, and governance. It is so important to pay attention to the governance of these companies. They are so protective of their brand, so protective of their reputation, because a lot of times that's all they have. You know, Nike is one of the most valuable brands out there.
Mm-hmm.
This is a brand that spans over multiple generations. You know, if Nike were to do something really bad, I don't know what that could be, but if they did something bad, there goes their brand. There goes such a large part of the value that makes up a firm. And that's why we are going to continue to see firms, companies paying a big attention to their brand awareness, their reputation, and things that really make up what they're all about today.
This is so interesting, Bill. This is so interesting. What a great point. And I think that people do pay attention to that quite a bit more. We've seen, a few missteps by, you know, some banks recently and some other companies, and they do get, flat back from it or whatever the word is.
Yeah. Penalties a lot.
Yeah,
of times.
Yeah. That's very interesting. I like that. So that is a really good point. I think that that's one of the highlight takeaways of our conversation tonight, that governance has become so, so important because reputations have become so important. And really, it spreads like wildfire now anyway with social media and, you know, young people and old people and everybody on Facebook and Twitter and, you know, Instagram. So that reputation can get tainted very,
absolutely,
very quickly. Very interesting.
There's no geographic boundary to a reputational risk these days.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it isn't just, oh, it's just in the Northeast, don't worry. It'll never reach California.
Mm-hmm.
It'll reach instantly around the world because of the way social media has, you know, not infected, but taken over communication.
Yeah.
You know, everything is instant. You make a mistake, it's going to be instantly known by everybody.
Yeah.
And that's why they are so protective of that, because that's their value. You know, the value of these companies is built around what they're doing right now, you know, how important they are to, you know, the industry they serve.
Yeah. And when we talk about governance, too, and watching what companies do, you know, we're seeing even a little bit of that spill over into, like, the sports realm, where we're seeing, you know, you know, the All-Star game getting pulled from Atlanta for the voting issues. So some of this is spilling over even beyond just corporate, responsibility. It's almost becoming social responsibility as well.
Well, you know, Laura, sports is a business.
Yeah.
And, you know, absolutely. They are very cautious with the things that go on.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't want to lose their customer. And, you know, they make the customer angry. There goes ticket sales. So you're right. I mean, everyone is paying attention to this.
Yeah. Okay, Bill, we're at our last break. And when we come back, we will let's wrap up a little bit of our ESG discussion. So when we come back, I want you to kind of give some of your final thoughts on that to give you plenty of time to talk about, you know, what you've been seeing in the market, what the past quarter has brought, and what you're kind of watching for moving forward. So let's give ourselves time for that. Folks, if you have questions, there is still time. 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Are you interested in inspiring and informing future generations through WDIY's programming? A gift through your will, retirement plan, or estate plan is a wonderful legacy to leave to those that will need a trusted place to hear what's going on in the world. For information about naming WDIY as a beneficiary, please call 610-694-8100 or visit wdiy.org/legacy.
And welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY 88.1. Just a reminder that podcasts of prior shows are also available at wdiy.org under Public Affairs, and then scroll down to Your Financial Choices, and also available at our own website, yourfinancialchoices.com, and questions may also be submitted through that website. If you're not comfortable calling or talking on air, you can certainly send questions and I will reach out to you specifically. We are talking with Bill Henderson, Vice President and Head of Investments at Valley National Financial Advisors. A fascinating conversation this evening, talking about ESG investing, or environmental, social, and governance, and learning what that means and the impact of it and how it's evolved over the years and the availability of ESG investing across the board. Bill, can we talk for a minute about who is this for, and if people want to either start investing responsibly or make changes to their current portfolio to incorporate this, can you give us some tips or ideas?
Sure. Who it's for, Lori? It really is for everybody. I think you no longer have to be considered this person who's like super socially aware and wants to be walking around with a sign on them saying I only want to do good. I think at this point, everyone should be a responsible investor. Everyone can take steps in their portfolio, even if they're small, and be a responsible investor. As I used the example earlier, I think we all can agree that we want a clean environment, and we all want to limit the impact that things have on the environment. We all want to make sure that a company does the right thing. It makes the right decisions for its employees. It tries and has a diverse workforce. I mean, you really need a diverse workforce. I've used this in examples in my own field and in my own practice, where I had a portfolio management team made up of a bunch of different people that all looked differently. And you know why? I wanted to get different ideas. If everybody looked like me, we'd have a bunch of ideas that Bill Henderson came up with. What good would that be? I want to have new ideas, different ideas, and unique ideas. So I really think everyone can simply ask their advisor, what can I do to be a responsible investor? What do you have for me? Put the onus back on them to show you what's out there in the space. And there's a lot. Every single investment management firm at this point offers unbelievable tools, great things to read, all kinds of opportunities to do it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so what if someone wanted to kind of do it on their own? Are they looking for terms like ESG? Or
Oh, yeah. You can, you know, everyone can be an investor on their own just as easily as they can go to an advisor. Mm-hmm. You can go on the most websites, like, you know, discount brokerage houses, the any large mutual fund family will have ESG, and you just put it in the search bar at the top. You could easily type in ESG. It's 10 or 12 things are going to come up to help you go down that road. You can simply Google it and say, who are the best ESG advisors? How can I learn about ESG? Mm-hmm. Be really specific in the search engine, and you'll get your results. Mm-hmm. You know, an interesting example, I'm sorry I always reference Google, and you can tell how big they are, but an interesting thing that Google is doing, they're adding, in their new release for Maps, they're adding an eco-friendly, look at your route. It can say, route or fastest route. Maybe the eco route may include a route that doesn't involve, you know, could involve walking or involve using, you know, public transportation. It may not be fastest, but it's going to suggest things like use mass transit. So it's just a way where, you know, another thing that is becoming more aware of what's really out there, which is paying attention to the things they're doing. Now, obviously, you're not going to necessarily take public transportation everywhere, but maybe if other things being equal, it's just as easy. You may pay attention to your Google Map route from now on and take it that way. Mm-hmm. And then,
well, one thing, if I can jump in, I wanted to ask a question. So, you know, people can invest with their advisors and get information from them and let them do the work, as you said. And some people might like doing things on their own, and there's various ways they can do that. But we probably should remind people that sometimes, though, if you're using an ETF or an index or a mutual fund, what is in those can change. That can be fluid. So it is still something that needs to be reviewed and watched from time to time. Do you agree?
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, I thought you were going to say, remember that there are risks. Absolutely, there are risks. This isn't a pure play, because there are terms like greenwashing. So it's just new term means I'm going to pretend that I'm a green bond. I mentioned that earlier in the call. Mm-hmm. And when you dig down into it, they're really not. Mm-hmm. Well, we're actually seeing some conservancy groups that have all this forest that's already designated as green and we're never going to build on it. Well, it's perfectly legal for them to sell carbon offsets to another company that now can say, well, I'm technically, you know, carbon neutral, mm-hmm. when they had to buy that carbon neutrality. Mm-hmm. But you have to look for that. You have to look for simple false advertising. You know, sustainability needs to be authenticated and authentic. So just saying that I'm sustainable doesn't mean that you are, really. So and a lot of times ask questions and you'll get answers. Have your advisor ask questions and they'll get answers. And then you make an opinion on your own. You know, is this right? You know, 2020 was a year when I said where ESG outperformed. But a lot of that was because some of the old value stocks, so energy and, you know, industrial names, underperformed because in the COVID world, technology outperformed. Mm. So we may see a rotation back to that, which could mean energy is going to do well this year. And you'll say, well, why did energy do well if everybody's moving to ESG? Well, it's not as simple as that. You know, there could be rotations within sectors that could cause things to underperform or outperform. So this isn't a one-year phenomenon. I think this is something that is, you know, a 10-year trend or a 20-year trend, mm-hmm. things that you really have to be aware of and pay attention to.
Yeah, and part of a portfolio. It doesn't have to be the whole portfolio.
Absolutely. Yeah. Easily say, I want to mark this much of my portfolio as, you know, this and learn about it and you know, become an interested investor, and I'm going to watch it and monitor it. And then over time, you'll see maybe this is a good thing.
Mm-hmm. So, Bill, with the time that we have left, which is, you know, about 5 minutes or so, do you want to kind of give us a little update on the market and, you know, how the first quarter went and any other relevant or pertinent information you'd like to share with us and our listeners?
Sure. I mean, the first quarter went really well. We had one of the, you know, a really strong stock market performance. I saw a piece where the best year for the Standard & Poor's ever, was the year that ended March 31st of 2021. Now, who would have thought that last March? Mm-hmm. But that was the case. We had one of the best years ever. So why is that? Why is the stock market doing so well? Why is the economy booming like it is right now? It's really the Fed and the government has done everything that it can do to make sure that we survive the pandemic. Fiscal stimulus is at an all-time high. Monetary stimulus is at an all-time low, meaning the Fed is keeping interest rates low. We've had multiple stimulus packages, you know, $5 trillion, I think, in counting, mm-hmm. plus another $2 trillion in an infrastructure bill. So everything is, and all that money is in the economy or, better yet, on the sidelines waiting to be invested in the economy. So right now, and we saw in the first quarter unemployment go from 6.5% to 6.2%. By year end, some economists are seeing, you know, or predicting that we could see unemployment back to the 3.5% level, which is where it was before the pandemic. And next year, it could be as low as 2.8% with GDP prints, so gross domestic product, of 9%. I don't ever remember a time when we've had that high of GDP in the country. Now, we had that giant blip in the third quarter, which was sort of quarter over quarter because of the pandemic low. Mm-hmm. But it's all because of, you know, the vaccines being rolled out more and more. 3.1 million doses are being administered every day. That's pretty big for America. And once that happens and everybody gets sort of herd immunity, we're going to see the travel and leisure sector open up, and that's going to be more jobs. Probably the last sector of the economy yet to go back to work fully is travel and leisure. So restaurants, bars, movie theaters, airports, all the things related to, you know, the Disney Worlds of the world, and then all the things outside of Disney World. As more and more things open and more people start to travel, all those jobs are going to come back. So we really could really see just unbelievable numbers this year. And, you know, there's a lot of money. I saw another blurb, $4.5 trillion of institutional money has yet to be invested. Now, this is institutional money, so in the pockets of the biggest investment houses. That's going to put the work in the market. You know, we're going to continue to see investments in technology, infrastructure.
Startups. There'll probably be more startups now, too, right? Because we did see some, you know, businesses probably close
Absolutely.
And be hurt. And so there's probably going to be a lot more small businesses, you know, starting
up. You know, Lori, one thing that we should learn in America is never get in the way of, you know, forward-moving technology. You know, there's a lot of companies that are gone, and you say, where the heck did they go? Well, they didn't think technology was going to change. They didn't innovate. They didn't invent new ideas, and they got mowed over by technology. And if you think that it's going to stop because the pandemic happened, you're wrong. We're going to continue to see the same thing. Companies will go out of business, and new companies will start, and there'll be a new top 100 firms in another 100 years, like there was this 100 versus 100 years ago.
Yeah. My Blockbuster. We loved Blockbuster.
Yeah, but now you can get Blockbuster with your remote. Who needs Blockbuster? I can get anything I want with my remote control. You know, I mean, it's like that's a big improvement.
Yeah.
So I do think we have to be, if there's a cautionary thing, and I probably am sounding way too optimistic, I can't help that, as you know me by now.
Yeah,
We have to be aware, you know, the inflation is something that's out there. There's inflation in certain things. Building materials are increasing in price. Raw materials, so rare earth elements, lithium, you know, molybdenum, palladium, things that go into making chips, not potato chips, but computer chips, are skyrocketing. Mm-hmm. So, and the chip isn't everything. The remote control that I love, I don't know how many chips are in there, but I'm sure there's a lot. Mm-hmm. So we could see inflation. But I think the Fed wants to see inflation. You know, Jerome Powell, the Fed chairman, has said he'd love to see inflation above 2%. So we're going to see that.
But he's going to keep it tapered for now, that it's averaging.
That's right.
Averaging, too.
Yes, average 2. We've been well below 2 for a long time.
Yeah.
So we have a lot of time to be above 2. And, you know, a little inflation isn't bad. That usually means inflation in your pocket in terms of higher salaries, mm-hmm. you know, a lot of times.
Well, Bill, it's been phenomenal having you. Thank you so much for coming on. We'll probably try to get you next quarter for a recap of the second quarter. So we'll probably try to get you back here in, I guess, July sometime. And we really appreciate you being here. Bill Henderson from Valley National Financial Advisors. And Bill, you frequently comment in our weekly commentary, which is also available at our website, valleynationalgroup.com, if you are interested in hearing the insights from Bill each week.
Thank you so much, Lori.
Okay.
Thank you for having me on. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you so much, Bill. Have a good evening.
Goodbye.
Bye. Folks, if you want more of your text questions answered next week, I am going to continue the discussion. Where are we with tax season and 2021 planning? So next week is going to be April 14th. We are used to a due date of April 15th. They've extended the filing due date to May 17th. They have not extended the estimated tax payment due date at this point. I am still holding out hope that they will do it. Last year, they did it on April 9th. I'm hoping they will extend the estimated payments. We're going to have some tips for you next week. If you are someone who normally does estimated payments but are not done with your tax return. So that's what we're going to talk about next week. Coming up next, we have Tom Druckenmiller with In the Tradition Folk Music. I want to really thank our listeners tonight. Awesome calls. Thank you, Lori C. Thank you, Shandi. Thank you, Bill Henderson. Thank you, listeners. Remember, pay attention, be proactive, not reactive. Make the best of your financial choices and have a great week.